It's not that. He goes, Dan, doesn't make sense. I've been working here for a long time and I see a lot of kids. And I need you to know, you don't belong here. He goes, I see you doing your homework and trying to stay out of it. And he goes, it doesn't make sense to me. You need to get out of here.
Anything you're particularly excited to talk about that's top of mind right now that you just can't wait to talk about? And it's okay if you don't have any answers to this.
I mean, I'm like vibing. My whole life right now, from my perspective, feels like a bit of a dream. You know, two weekends ago, I got off stage, the Tony Robbins thing, so I spoke. And then 2 days later, the podcast interview, our YouTube, I was begging, working with the team, like, could we get 100K view video? Like, we were putting all this effort. Now we've got 5.
With Tony Robbins.
What? Yeah, Tony's a quarter billion, I think, right now, almost 300,000. But our own videos did 100K. Because I asked, yeah, so like just the media stuff, I'm proud of, you know, getting introduced to just luminaries, like people I looked up to literally my whole life, like as a 20-year-old reading their books. And now these are people I'm having conversations and text message exchanges, like John Maxwell. What's going on?
So, yeah.
I don't know. And just the people like yourself and others that I just seem to, yeah, just like our worlds are colliding. I just feel like super in flow.
Yeah. Seems like a beautiful time for growth for you.
Yeah, I just don't know if it, I mean, hopefully it doesn't flow back the other way. I'm just finding a different way to be. It's probably the best way to say it.
Okay, well, I'm really interested to dive into this. So we could just like make this part of the podcast because I'm, what
put it
you,
in, man. I'm good.
Yeah, what do you mean? A different way to be.
Well, if I look at my journey, right? In my 20s, I was just trying to succeed because I'd gone through so much challenges. And I was really just trying to prove to people, and a lot of it is just dumb, like people that, you know, rejected me in high school, the neighbors' parents, like my buddies that I grew up with, their parents that wouldn't let me play with their kids, you know, because like I was a bad kid. My buddy Mike's mom, you know, that said I couldn't come into their yard because I was a drug dealer. Like just, but it wasn't true. At the time, it wasn't true. It might've been true. So like there was like this my 20s was about trying to become somebody to be able to show them, you don't know me. And oh, by the way, I'm more successful than you. Mm-hmm. Like that, I remember thinking like and it's like so weird because like, what am I going to do? Show them a statement in my bank account? Like what did I think would happen? Right? Like, oh, I'm going to show up in a McLaren and just, they're going to be like, they're just going to think I'm selling more drugs. You know what I mean? Like that. And that's what happened. I ended up becoming successful, you know, featured in newspapers, won all the awards. And their attitude didn't change. They just thought he's probably stealing from somebody or whatever. So then I went through some challenging times, even just in my personal life relationships with, I would say, being a workaholic. Because I was just trying to win. I was trying to fill a void. And then in my 30s, I would say I started having kids when I was 32, 34. I remember there was a moment where when I met my first son, it was like, I'm responsible for this being, obviously, but also I'm responsible for something that's gonna live way longer than my time here on earth. What a crazy idea. Because prior to that, it's like business, 5 years, 10 years, it don't matter. It's like, it just comes, it goes, whatever. But now all of a sudden it's like, oh, how I show up and how I raise my child is going to affect their life, their kid's life, their kid's kid's life. Like that's a crazy idea. Like that, I still remember the moment in the hospital when it hit me. And then I would say, just trying to figure out, what does this all mean? Why do we do it all? And then discovering that there's a completely different way than I've been approaching it, that is actually lighter, kind of like what I share with people, the concept of like a dark energy pushing you forward versus a light energy pulling you forward. And then I had like these moments and glimpse of light energy where essentially miracles happen, like things that happen. There's no other way to explain it other than alignment. Like there's no to-do list. When I was younger, it was like, what's the checklist, the process, how do we win? And now it's almost like, how do I be? And that's what you asked me. You said like, I'm just finding a different way of being.
Yeah. Take me through the difference between the dark place and the light place.
The dark energy is like a diesel type of energy. It's powerful. It's a force. It can push you. It can move tankers. It can move vehicles. It can move you. But along the way, it's a pollutant. You know what I mean? Like the Dan that would come into work full of energy, chaotic, you know, creating a whiplash and strategy with my team and trying to keep all the plates spinning. Like that's the interesting part. When I look at like who I was as an entrepreneur back then, it was like, okay, what is this guy doing? Okay, is he doing the right thing? What is this guy doing? Is he doing the right thing? And it was just like a very frantic energy. And all in the pursuit to become, to acquire things or be recognized to, back then I didn't know this, but to essentially answer this question, am I enough? So that's, you know, I didn't know that though. So, but I was on this dark energy pursuit of like proving people wrong. Any naysayers, anybody doubted me, anybody that, you know, joined my team and then quit. The bank that said, we're pulling your line of credit, like all of it. And then over the years, I've realized that, and man, if I could give this feeling to people, is there's no place to get to. There's no place. Like the place you want to get to feel the way you want to feel, you can feel today if you choose. So how do you be in that space and still realize that in that space, you will actually create more than you could ever imagine possible, because now we're not creating at the material level. And that's like the light energy, dark energy. It's like, that's an egocentric, materialistic world of achievement, which can make you a billionaire. It can create an external, visual, appealing life. Not saying that you can't do it that way, but it's heavy.
Yeah.
And it's usually littered with burnt relationships, vices, fears, right? Worried that somebody's trying to take stuff from you, et cetera, et cetera. And then in the new place that I found myself, that I'm just like continuing to like pulling on these strings, is just how can I continuously, what's the practice, the daily practice, the minute practice, this practice right here, right now,
yes,
that I can have that allows me to hold that, those moments of truth. Those like, I know that all of this is impermanent yet beautiful. It doesn't matter and it matters at the same time. It's kind of a crazy like duality. And from that place, as long as the intentions are properly aligned, anything, right? Being invited to speak at Tony Robbins, talking with people that I considered, I don't even know how to, like legends, like John Maxwell, and, you know, getting invited to interview Dana White, like that's, so I grew cool. up watching the UFC, so one, two, cool. and three, like back before they had rules about, you know, biting and poking people in the eyes. So all these things that have happened to me, honestly, in the last few months has just expressed a reinforcement of leaning into that. One of my buddy, Mike, he calls it full spectrum, Dan. I think that's that for anybody that knew the old 20, you know, in my 20s Dan versus 30 years versus now I'm 44. I think they might see that, and that's what it is.
So what is the blueprint to get to full spectrum, Dan?
Dude, it's so funny because I go to the gym every Saturday and it's kind of an open invite. I don't publicly tell everybody, but if someone wants to come work out with me Saturday, same gym, it's like a public gym. And there's this kid, Josh, that comes and he's 17 and he's in that headspace, right? He just graduated high school. He said to me, I want to be worth $100 million by the time I'm 30. He's in the pursuit of achievement. And at the same time, like bless him. And I get it. Yeah. I was that person. And what I, you know, there's a great, I think it's Ram Dass has a great quote that says, we spend the first half of our lives becoming somebody to then spend the second half of our lives becoming nobody. And that's like, I want, how do I explain to Josh or a Josh or whoever's listening that they have to suspend the motivating factors? And I don't know they can, because there's, what happened for me was just like a lot of work. Like all caps, the work, like a journey, a spiritual journey, a therapy journey, a betterment journey, a personal development journey, a relationship, like all these things over the years allowed me to kind of keep working through different aspects of my psychology to then get curious about things that in the past would get me upset. Now I'm just like, whoa, that's fascinating. Why that? Why this person in this moment, those words, why?
Yeah.
Why me? Why that and me? Because this person doesn't even have a reaction to that. And what's there? So it's kind of an interesting one, like, because I don't know. I actually do know. I'll be honest with you, Danny. I think everybody's here to go through that journey. And you can't. So I know it's like, how can we get them to understand this? But I actually think Josh has to go through that.
Yeah. And he has to experience that to the degree that he needs to experience it. And you hope that the degree that he needs to experience it is less than $100 million. Because if his version for success is making $10,000 a month, like mine was, and then I hit that and I was like, wait, this isn't it. This is not it. Like, it's almost better in some sense to have lower bars for your achievement, because then it—
You get there faster.
Get there faster to realize that it's not it.
And, but and then again, I also personally believe the further down we go, the higher we can go. So maybe because of his desire to go for 100, it's going to be so hard. And then at the top, so empty that on the back end, Josh becomes one of those people that becomes a transcendent character in his whole family lineage.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. And also, you can still, you can become a transcendent character
in your family, doing that.
Waking $10,000 a month and realizing that's not enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's kind of like, I love the humanity in it.
Yeah.
Right. I love the honesty. I mean, just the questions he asks are so fantastically perfect for who he is, but he probably gets annoyed with me because I just laugh a lot when he asks me these questions.
Because you see the meaninglessness behind his questions in some—
It's the pursuit of a destination that won't ever materialize.
Or that won't ever satisfy him to the degree that—
Never going to be there.
Yeah. So take me through your journey to God.
Yeah. I'm still on the journey.
We all are.
Yeah. I asked this great guy, Erwin McManus, great spiritual leader. And I said, I don't know about the Bible. He goes, that's cool. I was like, how's that cool, dude? You're like the guy that talks about the Bible. He's like, no, I talk about Jesus. I talk about, you know, these principles about life. And he goes, I would not get too caught up in words in a text. Instead, try to study the person. And that, I would say that's what has helped me over the last 6-7 years. But I mean, even as a kid, when I got in trouble, like when I got arrested, I turned to God. Wow. I said the words, God, if you're real, help me.
Wow.
Didn't have any grand plan for my life. I just didn't want to go to jail for decades. Like I just didn't want to continue. So like I ended up in prison, juvenile detention the first time when I was 15. And I remember when I was getting out, there was a guard there. And, you know, I was there for like 6 weeks, you know, during the summer months. And I said, you know, nice meeting you. Nice meeting you.
Yeah.
But I'm out. And he goes, I'll see you soon. I was like, what are you talking about? He goes, we always do. At the time, I didn't know, but he knew. I have like a 98% chance I'm going to be right back here in a few months. And he wasn't wrong. And so the second time when I got arrested, I turned to God and I said, hey, I need some help. I don't know what I'm missing. I obviously don't want to be here. Jail and juvenile detention, man, it's probably one of the most degrading experiences you could ever do to another human. I mean, you take their freedom, but you take their hope away. I mean, you know what I mean? and their sense of security. But I didn't even know who I was talking to. Like, that's the thing. I just said the word God, but I didn't really believe.
Yeah.
I was desperate.
Yeah.
And looking back now, I can see these amazing moments where there was his hand, the people, the conversations, the books.
Like what?
Oh my gosh. I mean, one of them I actually talk about in my book. So I was in this. So the second time I went back, they had an addiction program in an adult facility. Okay. So it was a juvenile. They had two cell blocks, but it was an adult prison, but they were set up for like kids that were in the system, but had drug addiction problems and wanted to go through treatment. So I get sentenced there because of, you know, kind of my background, and I'm doing this program. And the second time, like, I turned to God, I was like, help me. And I just felt like, okay, stay out of the prison politics, do your own thing, work, like, try to get your GED. So I'm like staying out of it, heads down. And over breakfast, they'd let us come out of our cell blocks. They'd set up a table, bring in the trays of food, and we'd eat and whatever. And, you know, we're 15, 16, and they'd have pots of coffee. Well, as a teenager, like, coffee's a big deal, especially in prison. And I grabbed the pot and I pour it and grabbed the rest of it and put it back down. And then there's this kid, Kirk. Now, Kirk was part of the gangs. And he was a year younger, but he was built like a Ninja Turtle. He had like an 8-pack. Like, he was just like, he was like a little muscle. And I remember he grabs the coffee and he goes to pour it and it's empty. And he just says, who's the goof that drank the rest of the coffee? And I was like, oh. So I stand up and I go, I did. Fight breaks off. Like, the whole friggin' cell block takes off and the guards rush it and grab us and, you know, like, we're floating down the hallway and they throw us in this thing called the hole, essentially solitary confinement. And it is one of the, this is like the most inhumane thing. Underwear, 23 and a half hours a day, lights on, concrete bed, stainless steel toilet sink set up. And they don't even tell you how long you're there for. And when they let you out into this like 10 by 10 room, you know, brick walls with almost like a fence at the top so you can't crawl out. But I mean, it's 25 feet. You're not going anywhere. I think it was like the third day I was there and the door opens and it's this guard named Brian. Brian had been working at the prison there for probably a decade at that point. And he was kind of like one of those kind of men that, he's like a man's man. I don't know how else to explain, but he's just like code of ethics, but like wasn't strict. So if you respected him and when he said, hey guys, we're doing this clean up, blah, blah, blah. And you listen, he would look the other way if you wanted a second dessert or if he knew you were smoking in your cell, but you know, don't make a big deal. Don't let everybody else. And like he knew, but he wouldn't say anything.
He was a good dude.
He understood it.
Yeah.
And he opens the door and he's just shaking his head and he's disappointed. And he goes, come with me. So I follow him and we're walking back to the cell block. And, you know, it's like in prison, there's not lines on the ground, but it's like, you can walk here, walk there, whatever. And as we walk down the hallway on the right is the door into the cell block. We walk past it, which I've been there for months. We never walked past it. And I'm walking by it and 10 feet down the hallway on the right, there's the guard unit, which is the inside of the one-way mirror. So in the cell block, there's a wall, it's a mirror, and the guard unit's inside. I never seen inside, and I'm not supposed to be in there. No inmate is allowed there. And he brings me in, and he sits me down, and I have my back facing the corner. And I'd never been in there, but I was like, oh, there's the cameras and the other cell block, because it's got the other mirror, it's on the corner. And it's just him and I, and he grabs a chair, and he sits down in front of me. And he asked me a question. He goes, what are you doing here? And I was like, where? He goes, I got in a fight with Kirk and, you know, they threw us in the hole. He goes, no, not that. He goes, what are you doing here? And I was like, here? Like St. John Regional? He's like, yeah. So, well, I got in a high-speed chase and I had gun and drugs in my background. He goes, it's not that. He goes, Dan, doesn't make sense. I've been working here for a long time and I see a lot of kids. And I need you to know, you don't belong here. He goes, I see you doing your homework and trying to stay out of it. And he goes, it doesn't make sense to me. You need to get out of here. And there was just something about definitely who he was and the fact that for sure he was taking a risk sitting me down and having this conversation in the guard unit. And that he'd seen all these kids and maybe, and I don't know if anybody ever said that before to me, that I was a good kid or whatever. I just wasn't hearing it, but there was just something in that moment where it like, I just thought, well, if Brian sees it, it must be true. If he is telling me this and he knows, maybe he's right. There was no more belief other than his. It was like a mustard seed. There was just something about that moment that for me set me down a different path. When we talk about miracles and God, yeah. Dude, I'm not alive if Brian didn't sit me down.
Yeah.
I'm not here. There's no way. There's no trajectory that points to anything other than Dan ends up back and he ends up hanging himself in the fucking cell. There's zero. I knew the headspace I was in. And if I didn't get out of there, I wasn't going to stay there.
What changed after that moment?
For the first time in my life, I felt like I wasn't as bad as everybody had said I was. Sounds so simple, dude. I thought I was broken. I thought I was cursed. I thought I was full of rage and anger. But that's because that's all I ever heard my whole life. I thought that I was a menace. I thought that I was taking space or opportunity from other people just by being alive. And he believed, he saw something in me that it's funny because like I knew in my heart I wasn't evil. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like even though I would be in situations where things happened and on the surface, it would be easy to go like, whoa, these people are bad people. I knew in my heart, I kind of didn't want to do it. And that I wasn't really like, if anybody would have gave me an option B, I would have took it. It just never presented itself. And I just always got caught. And looking back, man, I'm glad I got caught. I'm glad I went through everything I went through. All of it.
Because?
Because my life today is pretty freaking rad. It's so cool. Dude, it's so crazy. Danny, it doesn't make sense, dude.
That's God. It's not crazy. It's a miracle. And you know that.
I do
know that. And we often do this. We say that some situation, because it's so outside of the realm of what we can imagine, even after we've experienced it, yeah, that it's crazy. But it's not. It's a miracle. We're living and breathing in this reality. Like, it could be nothing.
Yeah.
It could be nothing.
It's crazy. It's not crazy.
It's part of our vocabulary.
Yeah. So it's language. It's almost like a nervous tick. My wife gets mad at me because like when we talk, gets mad at me. She likes that. She wish I don't use this language, but again, it's a nervous tick.
Yeah.
When she's expressing stuff, I say, that doesn't matter. But it does matter. To her, it matters. It's such a stupid thing that I do, but it's just almost because like I've programmed myself to like, oh, and the grand scheme of things that are issues in the world,
yeah,
it's on the bottom of my list. That's actually a more beautiful and honest way of saying it. But in short, I'm like, it doesn't matter. She's like, stop saying that. Yeah. It matters to me. And I'm like, oh yeah, I'm so sorry. You're right. It does matter. And to you, I'm just trying to express that in all of the things that I have to consider and think about today, for me, it's just not on the top of the list. But if it is for you, then you know what I mean? So like,
yes.
I love that. It's not crazy. It is beautiful. So that's like, that's the work I do with the kids that I work with. I work with a lot of at-risk youth. I have conversations every day with people that want more, right? Like I get it. Like the people on my media team, my team members, my business partners, some of them are young, in their teens, in their early 20s. And that is what I try to do for them, is just speak belief of their greatness, because it's their godness. I always separate the soul from the ego, man. Like even though, like I had a friend of mine, very good friend, unfortunately did something really bad. And my wife's like, I don't even understand how you react that way. I go, because I love their soul.
Yes.
Their humanity. I see that person. There's a reason why they were in my life, because they're actually incredible people. The activity or the action that they decided to do, that's their ego. That's the opportunity. That's their flaw, if you want to call it that. That's their journey, their dharma. And I'm such a fan of transformation that I will never discount the fact that someday, somehow, maybe they end up doing the work and end up over here, where I can look at them honestly and go like, oh, this person got what, that was wrong. They saw it. They're not the same person. And I will have space in my life for them at that point. Like that's what I want to share to the kids I work with, to the people around me. That, as a friend, that's how I want to show up.
How does somebody get there themselves in their own life of being able to look at people's souls instead of their egos?
I think I didn't know that that was a thing though. So like, I would just invite them to consider that the spirit is different than the ego. They're both required. And it's part of the human experience, what we're here to do, right? We're here, we have these like kind of like assignments. One of my friends, Stephanie, she calls them divine assignments that we're given to work through. And it'd be great if you worked through it and discovered the lesson and then moved on to the next divine assignment. But some people unfortunately get stuck. That's why it's like, you see people in a relationship and they're in a different relationship. And
it's the same relationship.
Yeah, it's like the brunette to the blonde but it's the same person, because that's the divine saying, hey, this is the work for you to do. So until you decide to do the work, I will keep presenting you the same person. It just looks different. So I think that's just being awakened to the idea that every person that you interact with, it doesn't matter if it's the person that cuts you off in traffic or the homeless person or the coworker or whatever, their soul at the level of pure, you know, love is beautiful. And you'll feel it. And that's why when you hear a song which is full of truth, right? Like that's what I love about art and music, is like, you know, when the artist is sharing themselves, a piece of themselves, that's what you're feeling. And then you get into like the business world, and like people show up and they have a certain kind of character they're playing, and you're like, I don't like that guy. I can't even explain it to you. I just, for some reason, I can't connect with that person. So that what you're seeing is a disconnect between the ego, the soul, the ego and the spirit, whatever it is. The awareness that both are there is actually a really cool one, because that allows you to hold space. I think the world is full of dualities, and the more you can just like understand that the darkness is required to appreciate the light, right? Like both are there. The good, you can't have good without bad. If not, it's nothing. You get this. So I love talking about it. In many ways, we are all consciousness experiencing each other.
Consciousness experiencing consciousness.
Yes. It's like, and I don't want to go too woo, but I mean, audience listens to you. So I'm assuming they're on board. And if you realize that, then you don't be upset when bad things happen, because the bad things are there to give you contrast to the good. Mm-hmm. That is actually the experience. That's why a lot of people have a hard time with whatever God they want to call God, their religion, because they're like, if a God exists, why would they allow these things to happen in the world? Right? These heinous, evil things. What I would encourage them to consider is that who decides that's bad? Mm-hmm. Like there's a forest fire and everybody, and look, we just had one and it almost took our home. But we're talking Mother Nature. Right. I am a visitor to her home. And turns out forest fires, whether you want to look at the day and say there's more now or later, it doesn't matter. Like Here's an interesting concept that'll kind of maybe wrap a bow on this. Your first thought is not your thought. but your second thought is. So we're connected to the universal consciousness, the universal mind, whatever you want to call it, global consciousness. So our anger around a forest fire, even though it takes people's lives and it's horrible, like I understand there's pain on that. The pain is the meaning that we associate to that. So in that moment, I can go, that is a beautiful thing that's happening for Earth to rejuvenate itself, to reseed itself, to propagate nutrients in the Earth. And it's always been there and it'll always be there. And that is the perspective I bring to it. That's the second thought. So the first thought is whatever happens. The second thought is how I assign meaning to it or action. Or you can just be super upset about it. And I believe your frequency is what you will frequently see. So you decide. That's the coolest part. The world isn't as it is. I mean, the world is as you are.
Yes.
And when you realize there are more senses and there's more, like, even I think Deepak Chopra talked about it. He said, like, do you realize there's insects in the world that have 1,000 eyeballs? And they process this world around us through a completely different lens. And if you could see what they see, it would look alien. But that is energy. That is what is actually part of all of this. We just happen to process this physical, whatever you want to call physical, through our five senses. But there are other animals and species on Earth that have a completely different sense of reality. So whose reality is real?
Dude, I love everything you're talking about, obviously. And I'm curious, in the business world that you built up and lived in yourself, was there any bit of hesitation or trepidation to share some of these topics that are more woo, quote unquote?
Yeah. There was like—
How'd you overcome that?
How did I overcome? It's a great question. I think what's happened over the years is I've gotten comfortable being me. And the more comfortable I am being me, I realize that that is the most unique thing I can be. And what other people appreciate in other people we admire is their authenticity to be who they are. So when you, if I like to ask people, like, what's a list of people you admire, right? It doesn't matter. It could be Taylor Swift. It could be Oprah. It could be Deepak. It could be, you know, John Maxwell. And I go, like, let's just audit why do you admire these people? And when you're honest with yourself, they do a few things that's really awesome. Even Gary Vee. One is they call their shot, right? They believe there's a future that could be created that they want to see exist. And they're willing to verbalize and put words to that. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter if you're Steve Jobs, this is what we're going to create. This is the future I believe in. This is what I see. So they see a future that doesn't exist and they're willing to verbalize it. And in that pursuit, they're willing to be 100,000% themselves, the good and the bad, the yin and the yang, the serious and effective and the funny and joyful. Those are not mutually exclusive. I actually think they're required. You can't create without intention and effectiveness, but at the same time, you can't create without connection and creativity, right? And where you create from, either competition or creativity, those are two different outcomes. See, a lot of people see folks that are doing things and criticize. And I'm like, you realize the only criticism, like your criticization, if that's even a word, you being critical of that outcome is a reflection of your own. Again, the world isn't as is as you are. And I've learned, even with, like, let's say nice things, the jet, the plane, the car, if you're irritated by that, it's because you are not on path. You see that you have internal belief systems that don't even allow that to be a possibility. If you're inspired by that, that means you're on journey of expansion, because all these things that exist, it doesn't matter what it is, it's the motivation behind why you want to achieve it. So one person, owning a supercar doesn't make you a good or bad person. It's why you need that car. What do you do with that car? What was the reason you acquired it in the first place? Was it to show the people I'm enough? Or was it to show the people you can too? Same activity, completely different motivations.
Or was it to show yourself, I enjoy this thing?
Yes, now I have personally, yes. When you check in with yourself, there's something aesthetically about that form, that beauty, that car, that color palette, whatever it is, that you creatively wanted. You didn't ask, hey, what do you guys think? What do you think? What car should I get? No, you were like, whoa, there's something about the shape of that that resonates with me. Like I'd love to see it in a, maybe like a cream color with the yellow. Like, whoa, that'd be cool. I think what you admire, you should acquire.
What you admire,
you should acquire. I think that it's actually a North Star for you to give you feedback on what it kind of, because I got it from the whole idea of like, we should become the person we needed most in our darkest days. Mm. Think about that. We should strive to be the person that could have spoken and gotten through that version of us. Like I think about every day is, have I equipped myself today? Have I become the person, acquired the skills, figured out how, could connect with my heart enough to penetrate the barrier my 12, 13-year-old version of me had created at that point? The anger, the rage, the mistrust, the confusion, like little Dan, right? When people, we talk social media and people are like, oh, no one do social media. I was like, why? Well, I don't need, and I'm like, what are you talking about? Well, I don't want the criticism. What if they don't like me? What if they don't want to hear what I say? I say, you're making it all about you. This isn't about you. This is about the other people. And they go, who? And I always say, little Danny. Isn't that cool?
So cool.
Yeah. Like I create for little Dan because I want to become the person that could have. And I'm not there yet, dude. Cause I know. I'm being honest. Like,
why not?
Dude, that kid was so. I'm not there yet. Comma yet. The power of yet.
Yes. But that kid was so what?
Just full of rage and didn't trust anybody. Fearful. If I'm myself, then somebody could take advantage of that. If I laugh, then they won't take me. Like it's just interesting when I think about what I was thinking about in the saddest moments. In the, you know, I got taken out of my home when I was 11, put into foster care, but I spent 3 weeks in a crisis center.
What was that like,
dude? It was weird. It's like, you know, those movies where you see somebody in a psych ward. I was in a psych ward. I was in a duplex they had converted, but I mean, 24 hours, lights on, staff there the whole time, door open into my room all the time, checking to see if I was still there. Cause like most kids ran away. Most kids try to hurt themselves. It was really weird. It reinforced the belief that clearly there's something different about me. Clearly I'm broken.
Yeah. It's interesting because today you, I'm sure, use that belief to fuel you of like, of course, there's something different about me in the positive.
It is the most beautiful character traits about me. Like that's it. When we talk about the being but different. Think about this. I love this idea of, you know, when people say like most people don't, it's like, it's kind of like, of course they don't. Like it is most people. Cause for you to do something that's extraordinary, then you inherently have to give up ordinary. Like when people say that, most people, I'm like, I know most people don't.
Yeah.
Like just, of course they don't. It's impossible. Like if everybody did it, then you wouldn't be standing out.
Right.
You'd just be like everybody else. You'd be average. And I said that, you know, one of my favorite things to remind people is the greatest gift, Danny, you or I could give somebody else is inspiration. And there's nothing inspiring by being average. Zero. So if you want to give a gift to the people that look up to you, support you, and love you, you cannot choose average. It's an impossible decision. But the cool part is not being average means fuller expression of yourself back to the full spectrum.
Yes.
Right? It's not conforming to social norms, right? It's deciding, I want this car for my reasons. I want this life for my reasons. I want to do a podcast for my reasons, not because, hey, this is a format and these are my sponsors or whatever it is. It's like, no, I'm doing this my way. And trust, that's where faith comes in, right? Faith that when I take that step, you know, even though I don't see the stairs, that step will appear. It does take faith. The idea that this is kind of where I've ended up now in my life, especially in business, is that even though I don't know where this will lead, I trust the process of listening to my heart and going down that path that will produce exactly what my soul needs. And that to me matters more than the material world, right? It's like the spiritual path. Yeah, and even in that language, I hope I don't lose people. But again, I know your audience can take it.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's just a lighter place to live.
Well, it's so interesting because the 12-year-old Dan or the 15-year-old Dan couldn't have heard that, right?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Look, so you're not connecting with him, but you're being true to your current version of yourself. And it's like, how do you balance the two of staying true to who you are as well as connecting with that person?
Mm.
It's a really tough balance and tightrope.
Yeah.
So like, when was the first moment you realized you were the Brian for someone else?
Mm. What a great question. When was the first moment? What a great question. So my uncle, Daniel, he's my mom's brother. My mom's adopted. He was adopted. So technically they're not biological brothers and sisters, but he was probably the most influential. We share the same name, but he was also the most influential man in my life at that point because he lived in Montreal. I'm Canadian. I grew up in the East Coast. And he drove a Porsche. So, you know, teenager getting in trouble with the law. My uncle's rich. He drives a Porsche. He had a beautiful wife. And he had this young son, Jonathan. And I found out later what happened, but essentially he passed away from cancer. And his son, Jonathan, went on, it just didn't take it well. And he would have been 4 or 5 years younger than me. And I would say that was after I got sober. I was probably 18. So he would have been 15, but just like in the, just dealing with it. And I had an opportunity to kind of share what Brian did for me. Like as I scan all the people over the years that I've ever had these kind of conversations, and now it's in the tens of thousands. I mean, I do it every day. I love it. I see it. I say it. I allow my intuition, my spirit to speak to me. I mean, I see a dad dealing with 3 kids freaking out in the passport line at the airport. And I'm like, dude, I got to tell you, you're an amazing father. You're holding on. Keep up. You're doing great.
Bro, I love you. I do the same.
Yeah. Well, of course, because it's what we're here to do, I think. So I do remember like 18, 19, reaching out to Jonathan just to kind of share with them just how creative he was. Because he was spiraling, man. He was spiraling. And it'd be a great story for me to tell you he's changed his life, but I haven't talked to him in 20 years.
Wow.
We don't know where he is.
Wow. Just goes to show you can speak life into somebody. Doesn't mean it's going to make a difference.
No. And what's cool about that is that when we do that, who are we really doing it for? Mm. Now people always want to know like, hey, did you ever reconnect with Brian? And the answer is yes. It took a while. It turns out it's hard to talk to a guard from a prison. Like they don't make it easy, right? We don't know their last names, et cetera. And, I ended up going to rehab for 11 months. There was a caseworker there named Mary Ellen. And for years, I told her like someday, I think you know Brian from, she's like, yeah. I said, I'd love to meet him. Like, but she needed to see Dan's, you know, he's going to stay sober. He's going to get his life together. Like takes a while. And it took 7 years. And I finally got to meet him. And when I shared with him the impact he had on my life, he didn't remember.
Holy.
Danny, he didn't remember that conversation.
Oh my God.
Because he used to have those conversations all the time. Wow.
How did that hit you?
It was so inspiring. I was inspired. I thought, oh, there's a completely different way to show up in the world. oh, you can show up selflessly. Like you can literally show up and be of service to every human around you to the point where you're impacting, like who knows how many other kids that he spoke belief into. It cost him nothing. That's the, dude, that lesson at 24, 25 years old, I was like, dude, why have I been holding on? Like I had the brakes on. I had the lid on. It doesn't have to be like one kid. It doesn't even have to be like only the kids at Portage. It can be anybody all the time to the point where your communication is so normal that you're out there helping and sharing, which this is the thing everybody needs to hear. It costs nothing. It takes nothing. It is the most powerful tool you have is the potential and belief to tell somebody else what you see in them. What I would say, and my coach Ed, he calls it their giftedness or their godness or the Jesus inside of them, whatever you want to call it. If you see it, this is where I go, who really wins? Because if I see it, it means my frequency is what I frequently see. I'm actually in tune. I get to live in a world where I see the giftedness and the godness and the Jesus and all these people. And in that space, when I go to my cousin Jonathan, and I try to speak some words of wisdom into him, who's really benefiting? Because I also got in that same moment of reflection and seeing that in him, I remind myself in me. So yeah, I haven't seen him, but I hold on to the belief that maybe somehow I could have had a moment to help him and he could be living a thriving life right now. And it just happened that we grew apart and and someday we're going to reconnect and our families are going to be, I don't know. And if it happens, awesome. And if it doesn't, it's just beautiful. Cause I did have the opportunity to, when you say who was the first person I ever kind of did that with, it was definitely him. But since then,
I know. It's every day.
All the time.
I want to hear the full circle story of 2016 writing down at Tony Robbins event that you're going to speak at, because that's one that ends in a happy ending.
Dude, it's crazy. So I invest in an XPRIZE. So Peter Diamandis, beautiful innovator in the world, runs an XPRIZE to, I think it was solve world education gap. And one of the winners is like the prizes you donate. One of the top prizes was he partnered with Tony Robbins. And you get an invitation to go to one of Tony's, you know, flagship events called Date with Destiny. It's the one, if you watch I'm Not Your Guru, it's that event. So I remember I was like busy working on this company and I saw this thing come on my feed and I was like, ooh, education, it's a passion of mine. I donate, you know, some money. I ended up getting tickets to this event. So I go to Date with Destiny. It's 2016 with my wife. And I remember we show up and we're going to registration. And they're like, yes, your name. And I give them, they go, oh, come with me. And I was like, okay. I go to this other table and they're like, oh, Dan is here. He's CIS. And I was like, and my wife, Renee's like, what's CIS? I'm like, I don't know. She's like, and then the woman grabs us and she starts walking us into the room. Everybody's waiting outside the room. She goes this little door opens. We get put in the room and she turns to me and she goes, how long have you known Tony for? I was like, oh, I don't want to get you in trouble. I don't know Tony. She's like, oh, well, you're CIS. And I was like, what's CIS? She goes, Chairman Invited Seats. And I'm like, what's that? She goes, oh, you're part of Tony's like friends and family. And like your seats are come with me. And we go all the way to the front of the room, right next to the stage.
Wow. Did you know of Tony before?
I knew of his work. I read Unleash the Power Within for sure. Yeah. In my 20s.
In your 20s.
Yeah, for
Very
sure.
Cool. Very
Aware
cool.
of his work, never been to his seminar.
Understood.
The first experience, we go straight to the top. To the top of the top, because Date with Destiny is at the top of everything he does. And Chairman Invited Seats, which is Melissa Etheridge is on the left, Natasha Bedingfield is on the right. The judge from Dancing with the Stars is right there. The Surgeon General of the United States is right. He's my partner. We're doing Make Your Moves and dancing on chairs. It's like the crazy energy. And we spent, I think it's 6 days, just my wife and I learning about how it all works and experiencing things. So they talk about business mastery, another event. My wife was so inspired. She's like, I'm going to go. And one of the things that they did to entice people to sign up is if you go, you can invite a guest. And I was like, I'd like to go. And she's like, do you want to be my plus one? I was like, yeah, let's go. It was like in a few months. So we go to Business Mastery. And it's the same thing, high energy. Anybody's been to a Tony Robbins event, it's like, it's full on, 16 hour days. It's cold, the room's cold because they want to keep you awake. And you get into teams and we start a company and just, it was a beautiful experience. But the last day we're working on kind of the, let's capture everything and put it to paper and let's build a plan. And one of the exercises is a goal, like write down the goals. So I'm sitting there and I'm writing down some goals for the next 3 years, 1 year stuff. And I write down there, like kind of like a vision, like a BHAG, big, hairy, audacious goal. Speak on stage at Business Mastery. And I remember my wife's like, what's on your list? And I show her and she's like, okay. I'm like, they said, write down whatever comes to your heart and don't worry about the how. That was the instructions.
What made that come to your heart?
There was just, because here, I don't know why. I mean, I was inspired by what I was experiencing. I thought obviously the privilege of being on stage and serving 5,000-6,000 people. Even the question of asking myself, what would need to be true for me to even be on the radar or be invited, right? Like who would I need to be? Because like, millions of people go to events every year. There's probably millions of entrepreneurs that would love the opportunity to speak on stage. Many of them, at that point, I didn't have a book. I didn't have a social media presence. I didn't have any of that.
Wow.
And I just said, you know, I think it'd be interesting as a North Star to say what would need to be true. Now, I've done a lot of work on visualization and manifestation and belief systems and creation. So I took it to the next level, which I always do. I put it on my vision board. So it's been on the back wallpaper of my laptop for 6 years. And then 3 years ago, we're working on our vivid vision for my company, one of my companies, my education company, SaaS Academy. And my designer, Rich, he was having a hard time in his life. And I said, I don't know how I can help you through this, but I know the guy. And I gave him a ticket to go to UPW. Wow.
Tony Robbins event.
Yes, Unleash Power Within. So he went, changed his life. He comes back. He's like, dude, I get it now. And I see, because I shared with him, someday I'd like to speak on it. He goes, I see that for you. So when we're working on the vivid vision, he's my designer. He puts in this document that visual of that stage. And he takes off the photo of Tony and me, and he puts me on the stage, and it's in our vivid vision. So every new hire that we bring on, we would tell, this is what we're creating. This is the vision. Someday we want to have these best-selling books and speak at Business Mastery. We just tell people all the time. And it got to the point where I would just say it. I knew it was a little crazy, but you know what? It was one of those things where I don't care how and I don't care when. I think it was worth pursuing. And 4 months ago, I'm sitting on my couch next to my wife. And Anne, who's here, my assistant, texts me a screenshot. I'll send you the screenshot. You can put it on the video.
Video King Pablo, put it up.
Yeah, yeah. And it's an email, and it said something like, Mr. Martell, you know, Tony Robbins International, we'd love to invite you to speak at Business Mastery. Here are the dates. And it's, and I think it was a fist pump and an explosion or something. I don't know. It was like two emojis. It was a screenshot and two emojis in my phone. And dude, I just broke down. I said, Peanut, you're not. This is like on my wife, Peanut. I said, you're not going to believe this. She's like, what? I was like, she's like, what? And is, I don't know. I think she actually recorded it. I just was like, I just felt this like, yes, like this. Oh, you know what I mean? Like this. We did it.
Yeah.
Like it happened. Holy crap. Like, holy crap.
Holy God.
Holy moly. Yeah, it's crazy. It's God. And I'll be honest with you, Danny. It wasn't till I was standing at the top of the stairs at the event, music blasting, and Scott, who's the MC at the event, I'm standing there. I still remember I'm standing right there at the top of the stairs because I've been in the audience since that moment, since the first Business Master. I went to like two or three other events. So I've been in his audience, but I'm standing at the top of the stairs and Scott is going, put your hands together and let's welcome Dan Martell. Na, 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 na. And I'm just like, how? So I share that because, you know, I think it's Joe Dispenza said it once. He said, I think it's important for us to write down something that we want to achieve that is so fantastical, so crazy, so insane that only if it ever happened would you have to believe in God. And I've had several of those. I've had several of those.
That's really what it is, right?
That's exactly what it is.
When we achieve a vision so miraculous, we are really saying, thank you, God, you're real.
There's no to-do list. There's no strategy. There's no blueprint. There's no script. There's no fucking SOP. You can't buy this. There is no way for me to teach you how to get on Tony's stage. It has to be divine. Yeah. It's impossible. He chooses. What would need to be true for that circumstance, situation to ever occur? It has to be bigger than us. And I just think that's the coolest thing in the world. That's how, when you asked at the beginning, what are you excited about? I'm like, I'm working to continue to figure out the practices to just be. Because I'm telling you, right now, just being is producing some pretty beautiful moments in my life.
What were some of the beliefs that you had to unlearn to just be?
It's a good one. My friend Stephanie, she's a gem. And she's kind of my spiritual therapist. She has a PhD in theology, but she's practical. You know, some of these people, they're so far out there. They're like, it's like effervescent. It's like, they're like vapor. You can't really put your arm around it. You're talking to them. You're like, I
love those people too, by the way.
I love them, but I need a little bit more tactical.
Sure.
And she can resolve the mystical to the spiritual, to the religion, to the business. She used to run a very successful business.
What's her last name?
Stephanie. It's funny.
Stephanie's fine.
Yeah. What is Stephanie's last name? I don't know.
Spiritual lady, Stephanie. I love that.
Yeah.
And I'd love to get her contact information.
I will give you her contact information. So we'll put Stephanie underneath her. She goes by the priestess, I think. She's just been a friend for so long and she's kind of gone through this evolution, right? Anyways, the thing that she explained to me, and this is really cool for some of the, I'm a high performer and I'm a type A and I do this and this. She goes, when you snowboard, like you've been snowboarding for a long time. I was like, yeah, like 25 years since I was like 13, maybe 31 years. Okay. She goes, do you think about snowboarding? Do you like have an agenda for how you go down the mountain? And like, do you like map out the line and you're going to hit this and you're going to do this grab? I said, no. She goes, what do? I said, I just snowboard. And she goes, do you like, is there any part of when you're riding? It's very, you just go with the flow. I said, yeah. She goes, I think you've been businessing long enough. I think it's time for you just to be. What do you mean? She's like, your next meeting, for example, I want you to show up. And I know in your book, she read my book. She's like, it's a beautiful book. I get it, Dan. And it tells me everything about you. She goes, I want you to consider just showing up with an intention to serve. No agenda, no process, no SOP. Just, can you just be? Can you stop having to think about the business and just be present and say, how do I serve the people on this meeting? And I was like, it was like, that's a crazy idea. Like, I'm like, but I'm not opposed to it. I was like, why am I, you know, because I felt the resistance and I was like, hey, get curious. And I was like, I'm going to do that. I have like 5 or 6 meetings today. I'm going to show up and I'm not going to show up with an agenda or like, I'm not going to guide it any one direction. And I will tell you, not only do I think we did some of our best work that day, I felt lighter. So when we talk about dark energy and light energy, I ended that day with way more energy in working through things that were tough, but from a different perspective, from a different energy that allowed it to be lighter. So what she taught me is how to take the effectiveness and then the beingness and then just, because at a certain point, how many times do you have to go down a mountain really fast to finally realize just snowboard? How many times do you have to be in a meeting year over year over year thinking that that is my secret sauce and that is how I create and I have to show up this way before you say, hey, maybe it's not that, it's in spite of that. And that there's a completely different way. And that's where the faith is required, where you take the step, you can't see that there's a staircase, but you got to trust that it will show up and showing up to that meeting with pure intentions of being of service. And that energy actually allows you to co-create with other people in a 10 times bigger way than you ever thought possible. Just try it. And it is, it's what I do. Literally, I allow myself to have fun, to listen to my heart, to challenge past beliefs. Like, does it have to be that way? Let's try it differently. Let's see what happens. How does that feel? Put it on. And that's I would say that's my, that would be my suggestion for people.
Yeah. It's interesting how one part of what you said was, I felt some resistance to doing it the way Stephanie suggested. And that's how I got curious. And like, if you just take that one sentence that you just said really quickly, because it's just second nature to you and to me, you feel resistance, get curious. Mm. You feel resistance, you get curious.
Yeah.
Where did that start for you?
Mm. Where did I learn that? I mean, I've studied all the books, you know, the Eckhart Tolle's, all of it. So I can't remember the first person to introduce me to that concept.
Yeah.
But it's probably been a decade or 15 years. I just love, it might've been therapy. I mean, I don't know. I have 5 coaches right now. Like, I don't have a limit on my expansion, right? I'm addicted to expansion. So, but I think it was, I just think it's a great idea because again, if we talk about the ego and the spirit, like I am not my ego, right? Mm-hmm. And so the only way to work on it is to be aware of it. And curiosity is, I think, one of the best ways or tools to get there.
Yeah, because what happens is, it's so interesting how all these people circle around the same ideas.
Yep.
It's like, Stephanie's saying the same thing as Eckhart, saying the same thing as your yoga teacher, saying the same thing as your other coach. And you're like, what is that?
Yep.
Well, that's the language of God.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
When you are thinking about, okay, my life is going in this direction. I am full of love, energy, excitement. I'm pouring into people. I'm inspired. I'm inspiring. And now, what part of the little Dan is still in there being like, is there any part?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Of you who doesn't believe you're enough, who doesn't believe you're worthy, who believes this is crazy, who believes that this life that you're living is too good. And what's that part?
Oh, yeah. It's fun because I do the dance.
Yeah.
Every day I do the dance. Right? I do the dance of like, what other supercar do I want to buy? Do I really want it for me? Mm-hmm. Right? Am I buying it to impress or am I buying it for me? Do I want to upgrade my jet? Why? All of it. It's fascinating to get curious. If anything that I continue to do from not even possessions, just like, I mean, the other day, my wife was she was experiencing the world through her whatever. And it was hurting me, my ego, because of the story I was telling myself about why she was feeling that way. And I remember I was sitting on the couch and she kind of came in the living room and then she went upstairs and I knew she was upset. And I go, if I stay here, I'm safe. If I just stay here and then I get in my car and I go to the studio and I do my thing, by the time I get back, it'll move through.
Yeah.
And I know what that looks like.
Yeah.
Safe. Or I get curious and I go, hey, it's time to work. That little Dan needs to do some work right now. And I'm going to go upstairs and I'm going to sit in it and not fix anything. And not have my ego feel attacked and not react, not be emotional about it. And I remember I went up into the bathroom and I sat on the counter. I'm a big dude, man, but I don't care. I sat on the counter, I put my feet in the sink and I almost got like ready to, I like brace myself. And I'm just like sitting there with my knees up. I'm looking at her, she's getting ready. And I just is like, babes, what's going on? And she's like, da 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 da. And I was like, oh, and I could feel it, right? I could feel the pressure on my chest. I was probably getting, you know, red in the chest. Like I could feel the heat. Cause it was like, you know, I think anybody that shows up every day to provide, if anybody's in pain or frustrated or angry, we always feel like, hey, I don't think they appreciate all the work we're doing to provide, right? A lot of men, I know that I can only speak for myself. That is my experience. I show up every day and I'm disciplined. I'm creative. I'm consistent. I do all the stuff I have to do to solve problems for people I love. And when those people are not in the best moods or states, it hurts me, not because of anything they say, but because of how I interpret that. So I'm like, she's going, and I'm like, so I try to match her breathing. And then I say like, wow, that sounds tough. What else? And she keeps going and she's talking and I'm just like listening. And she's like, I think you do this and that. Ooh, that one really hurt. Oh fuck. Okay, dude, shut the fuck up. Just don't say anything. I'm just like, and I just saw her whole energy dissipate. And I was like, you are an incredible mom and you take on so much. I don't even know how you do it. And you inspire me. And I love you. I'm just grateful. I'm grateful you think of the boys. Because that's what I'm hearing. She's like, do you even mean that? I'm like, I do. Like, I like legit do. I'm not as thoughtful. When you think about putting sunscreen on their face at 5 a.m. because you check the weather and it's going to be high UV index, like that fascinates me and I love you for it. And you could just see, she's like, she felt seen, heard, hopefully appreciated. So I just sat in the sink and then she kind of came over and I got up and I gave her a big hug and I just held it until she let go. And I said, you good? She goes, yeah, I'm better. I said, cool. I got to head out, but I love you. I walk away. I'm not gonna lie, man. I was like, yeah, did it. Woo, did it. Little Dan, hey man. Like we did the dance. We did the dance. That was hard. Yeah. But guess what? My coach says it often. Your capacity is expanded at your extremities. In that moment where I decided to lean in, because I could have sat downstairs, I could have went to the studio, I could have avoided it, and then I knew it would have dissipated, but guess what? It would have still been there for the next time. I was like, all right, little Dan, let's go do this work.
Why were you so fearful to do that?
Oh, because in the past, like, I just didn't have the words to communicate.
Wow. Yeah. And how'd you learn that?
Getting curious. Repeating, this isn't about you.
Yes.
This isn't about you. And guess what? Everything she's communicating is her experience and there's nothing wrong with that. Allow her to feel that way. It's all the stuff that, like, you know, you read the books and it's like, I get it, but man, emotionally so much harder because that wounded inner child's still there. And it's, and we're always like asking the question, am I safe? And when people make you feel unsafe, you want to, you know, it's just a natural reaction. And again, I think the people closest to you, they actually have the biggest ability to show you where you're not free.
Yes.
The people that are like, I don't know, off the internet, they could take the same words, they could say it in a comment on Instagram and I would care zero. Yes. But yet my dad, my mom, my wife, my kids have this ability to penetrate into my soul, into my heart. And that is actually the gift. And that is why I believe they're there for us to experience ourselves.
Yes. And your capacity to hold space for another is completely based on your capacity to hold space for yourself. So the very fact that you were able to do that speaks to the fact that you went there first with yourself many, many, many times to hold yourself with love and compassion as you were struggling through it so that you could then do that same thing for your wife.
That's so cool.
It's the truth. And I also love, I read something from Preston Smiles recently, which is like, everybody is a guru until they get into a relationship. I just love that idea because, you know, it really, that the relationship aspect shows you where you're not free.
Yeah.
And I'm sure all of your stuff comes up.
All of it.
So.
Yeah, I think that is the divine assignment that a partner is.
Yeah. It's a really special thing to be in a relationship and to get your stuff brought up and then to be able to hold space And dude, I genuinely feel like I could talk to you forever. Like, you are such an amazing storyteller. You're such an amazing human. I feel the love through your heart and through the truthfulness in how you've decided to live, because the level of freedom someone experiences or is living in is directly related to the amount of truths that they've been willing to say to themselves and act on them. And you've lived in a lot of truths. And I know that because you are free. And you feel free to me. And that's a wonderful thing to experience. And I'm so grateful for you. And yeah, this is beautiful. This was a beautiful conversation. And you have a book, Buy Back Your Time, Dan Martell. It's been out for a year now.
Yeah, check it out. On Instagram is my favorite. And if people want, like, the book is awesome. If people want the shorter version, just message me. I'll send you the direct Google Doc. You don't have to opt in or buy anything. I would love if people go check it out, because it is... What's cool about the book is it's the chocolate broccoli. It's the Trojan horse, right? It gives you the space to actually go on the journey to do the work without having to implode first. I didn't write that in the book, but it's kind of in the book, but you would know, because a lot of people usually find themselves on the other end of some pain or a massive win that realize it's empty. So I'll teach you how to do that. But the reason why we buy back our time is actually have the space in our calendar to go do the work.
You've been doing the work.
I'm still doing the work, man.
We're always doing the work.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And so grateful for you. And the last question is about expanding love and freedom. What can someone do right now if they're listening to this episode and they turn off the episode, they had a great time with us, but now they want to use some of the things that we've talked about to expand love and freedom in their own life or the people's lives around them? What should they do?
Close their eyes and just repeat, I am enough. I am enough. And just feel that. It's all there. It's always been there. It'll always be there. And in that space, create.
Dan Martell.
Dude.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it, Danny.
You're a legend.
That was awesome.